Hello and welcome. And our job seeker topic today is starting your own business. So let's be honest. If you are a serious job hunter and the thought has crossed your mind, especially if you were unfairly terminated from your last position, most everyone at some point thinks, well, should I start my own business? Starting your own business can be swimming with the sharks or swimming with the seals. It just depends on several factors that we're going to be discussing today. To help me discuss this topic, I'm joined by special guest co-host Tom Board out of Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors. He is featured on our website, and you can see his picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello there, Tom.
Hi, John. Glad to be with you this afternoon.
Yes, it's a delight to have you here. I think this is going to be quite an adventure to discuss this, since both you and I are experienced in this topic, and we have coached a good number of individuals in this area, right?
Yes.
Just a quick note on Tom. He's been assisting men and women with their career advancement since 1990, and that's over 22 years. He has a master's degree in counseling and oversees his private counseling practice in the Denver area. Since 1990, Tom has completed over 2,500 career advancement assessments using the IDEC Career Match system. And Tom, we're going to spend our first 15 minutes or so talking about our topic, starting your own business, and then we'll take a short break and get into the questions that have been sent to us through our job seeker email. But as we begin, let's try to paint the picture on exactly what is this topic about. What does it mean when we say we're going to talk about starting our own business? So we have two kinds of businesses. We have a for-profit business, and we have a non-profit. And non-profit falls into two categories. It can be religious non-profit or religious non-profit. And even more, we have a business that can be started from scratch. It can be something you make up yourself. I think I'd like to do XYZ. It could even be a franchise that you purchase, or it could be a business, an established business that you buy. By far, the most complex and the most risky is starting something on your own from scratch, something that does not exist somewhere else. It's kind of a one-of-a-kind type of a thing. That is the absolute most difficult. And the topics that Tom and I have prepared for our show today are going to take some of the mystery out of this, so you can get a picture of yourself. Am I the kind of person that would succeed in this? Or maybe you can team up with someone, and you could be the number two or number three or part of the startup team. So that's the approach we're taking. Tom, let's discuss the profile of an ideal startup business owner. Why don't you take a swing at that, and then I'll join in alongside you. What would you say would be some key things that would distinguish the ideal startup business owner from someone who should maybe not start their own business?
Okay. Well, I think the first element here is there needs to be some sort of a knowledge or experience base that they're moving into this business with. Either they've participated as an employee, or they've grown up around it. There has to be some sort of experience where they have some idea of what this is like, even if it's maybe not the particular type of business, but maybe they've had something in a related area that they have some knowledge about what it will take to actually move this.
Yeah, and absolutely, as opposed to being something pie in the sky, as a matter of fact, speaking of pie in the sky, I had a client. He and his wife were thinking about starting a pie kisok in a mall, and they would it would be like pies to go, and you would just order one pie at a time, maybe a cup of coffee, and that was the whole business. But they'd never done it before. Neither had been in the restaurant or food preparation business. They had no idea of what type of licenses and permits they would need, and no knowledge of what it takes to make something that tastes good, how long it needs to be preserved or refrigerated, and on from there. So I think what we're saying here is that a person needs to understand sort of the core of what it is they're getting into, whether they are buying an existing business or whether they're starting from scratch. There has to be a foundation of some kind, because the person that's starting the business is the ultimate go-to person. They are the ones that have to be making the purchase decisions, whether you're going to lease equipment or buy equipment or leave office space or vehicles, it's whatever it is. And there has to be a good, sound knowledge. We need this and this and this, as opposed to, oh, it'd really be nice. One factor that constantly amazes me is how many bed and breakfast businesses go bankrupt over and over and over again. And, you know, that comes from a more romantic, oh, wouldn't it be neat, as part of our retirement, we'll just start our own B&B. And, you know, we've stayed in a few and so on, but the individuals did not research it out, did not understand what was involved, hadn't done it before. And I think the turnover rate is like 5 years they go out of business, 5 to 8 years. It's just astounding. Restaurants are another startup favorite, and they the shelf life of a restaurant is around 5 years. People love to go to new restaurants, but if they're going to keep coming to the same restaurant, there has to be something new. Otherwise, they quit going. Well, Tom, I've been waxing eloquent on that too long. Let's go. Any other specifics of what this qualifications of the startup person?
Okay. I think the next one I think is very important is that the person needs to have a pattern of entrepreneurial initiating and developing that they have demonstrated either in experiences that they've had in a work environment or through church environments or whatever, where they've been in charge of starting up programs, starting up new ventures. And it doesn't have to necessarily have been a business per se, but they've had to demonstrate an ability to be able to get things off the ground, to pull a team around them, to be able to help them kind of do the elements that they personally might not be able to do, whether it's accounting or whatever. But they need to have the ability to get things moving.
Absolutely, yes. I think this is an excellent distinction, that the person has a sense. What does it take to get a concept communicated to others to bring them together, hold their feet to the fire, and get this thing off the ground? A startup business could be just one person, their laptop and their pickup, and they're doing landscape remodeling. But there are a lot of other individuals that are involved that need to be on board, starting with the bank, that this vision, this concept need to gel with, and even the first run of customers. So I think what you and I are saying here, Tom, is as we look back at a person's behavioral profile, we would say that ever since high school and up through adult years, there's been a pattern of behavior of entrepreneurial initiating and developing new projects, new ventures, and there's a rhythm of how to get people to buy in, and that's just compulsive with the person. They're always doing that, no matter where they go. So that's another distinction that's very, very important. Otherwise, this thing might be dead on arrival. It just might go flat, and person goes bankrupt. They spent all their money, and they're scratching their head wondering what happened. Okay, any others here, Tom?
Yeah, I have another one here that I thought was really important. There needs to be some sort of a pattern of being able to promote or to sell a product or an idea. And I've really watched a lot of people want to start businesses and have knowledge, experience. They like getting things started, but they hate promoting or selling something. And inevitably, anything that you're trying to have a business do, you're needing to promote something. And if there's not a natural ability in you that you've not been a person that enjoys that, it'll make it much harder to get a business going.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, if you're going to borrow money at the bank to buy some equipment or a vehicle, or even if you're going to put down an office lease, sign on a lease, those individuals need to see some pattern of you getting other people excited about what excites you. One of the simple tests that I like to use with individuals is to ask the question, if you're reading a book and you're into this book about a third of the book and you really like it, it's one of the best books you've ever read for this year, are you going to tell anyone? And I wait for just a few seconds. And what I'm looking for is someone to say, well, of course. And then I say, well, who? Anybody that'll listen. I'm going to, you know, if this is a great book, the world needs to know. Shout it from the rooftops. That begins to tell me that this person is a walking advertising megaphone. No matter what it is that excites them, it could be a restaurant, a book, a movie, it could be a new sale that they just went to where they save 50% or whatever. They just love to tell people. That's a good sign of someone who, for at least 3 to 5 years in this new business venture, they're going to have to be doing that every single day. And if that doesn't fit the person's pattern, we got a problem. Well, it's time for our break, Tom. Let's pick it up after the break.
All right.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan. We do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give their life meaning and purpose.
Do you really think that anyone, regardless of education, present job, or a reentry homemaker with no current marketplace skills, can really believe that there is something special out there?
Yes, Evan, I believe they can find a fulfilling career and get hired to do it.
You know, John, as I've talked with you about career advancement, I've been thinking about all those thousands of mid-career adults who go back to school to earn a college degree or even an advanced graduate degree, and yet...
Well, yeah, Evan, and yet they don't get hired in their field after they finish the degree, right?
Right. Yeah, it seems so sad.
Well, there is a brighter picture that advanced education can really pay off if only the student took the time to find his or her sweet spot and then choose a degree which complements the career choice.
Boy, that really makes sense. Can we talk more about this during the next break?
Certainly.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast and pick up where we left off.
And here we are at our Job Seeker broadcast. Our topic for today is starting your own business. Is this a realistic option for you, or are you going to end up swimming with the sharks? My guest co-host today is Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Tom's picture and bio. Just scroll to our website and click Preferred Counselors. Tom, just before the break, we were discussing another qualification that we feel is important for someone planning to start up their own business, and that was there needs to be some previous pattern of behavior of promoting or selling. Doesn't mean the person has had a job title of a salesperson, but they have an innate disposition for enjoying talking up whatever they're doing. Anything more you wanted to add on that?
No, but I just want to reemphasize what you're saying. It's so important, especially when you're wanting to start up a business, because it's literally kind of making something that's not and making it become something, and to be able to put an energy out, to be able to communicate with others and have an enthusiasm about that is just essential. And if you're not there, there's just no energy for people to respond to with you and your business at all.
Yeah, I think some people feel that, well, if they have a good friend or a network of friends, that those individuals are going to partake. And it's possible that they'd be curious about it. But really, starting a new business is introducing something new. And for people to get involved, they have to stop doing something to devote time to get involved in what you're doing, unless it's just obviously there and they would have to fall over it to avoid it. Most new startup ventures aren't like that. And I'm thinking of a business that you and I are very acquainted with, and that's the field that we're in, providing career guidance. I have many, many individuals nationwide who are so attracted to and excited about this field. They really, really want to do it. They have zero past experience. And my first counsel to them is, you need to have an established referral process that accounts for half of the income that you need to run your business. And so that means a part-time job, a half-time job somewhere else, or some kind of a contract where half of the clients that you are seeing come from a college, a university, an association, a government agency, and so forth. If you don't have that, then this is not a good thing, and not at all a good thing to start up. It's a very, very difficult. Any attorney or counselor will tell you that that first 3 years is just murder out there beating the bushes trying to find clientele. Even dentists would be another group that struggle in that first 3 years. Okay, so we are saying the person needs to be knowledgeable. They need to have a pattern of entrepreneurial initiating, developing behavior. They need to also have a pattern of enjoying, promoting, and selling. Anything else you want to add to this mix, Tom?
I want to add one more thing, and I kind of chuckle at this because I've seen the highs and lows of this one. Is a person needs to have the rudiments understanding, just a knowledge of a little bit of knowledge of accounting and finance. And it's been really interesting for me to observe people that go into thinking they can have a business and know nothing about accounting or numbers or finance and wonder why it's such a burden to them, and they get so confused, even though they might get a bookkeeper and somebody else to kind of help them with things. It just is much harder to understand where you're at, how you're doing, what it's going to take, understanding kind of the flow of how money goes in and out. if that is not something that a person at least has some understanding about it, there's a whole element of business, which is the heart of it, which is, you know, the producing of an income, either for profit or nonprofit, that they don't understand actually how it's moving, and it will not succeed well if there's not some understanding here.
Absolutely, yes. And I would say one of the biggest mysteries for those that don't understand accounting and business, and I have to be one that when I started in this field, I was very fortunate. I had sponsors. My startup phase was financed, but I have vicariously gone through this with other clients. You can be bankrupt and not even know it. And now you're starting to have to uncover, can you get out of this without losing your home, losing all the assets that you've put out there. And banks and leasing companies don't, you know, when it comes to the money, they don't have a heart. And most of the time in a startup, you have to sign your personal name, not your business name, but your personal name means all your assets, your own home. Even you could have your wages garnered to pay back on things that you have leased and so on. Simple little thing, and that is the location of your business, the name of your business. All those kinds of things have to do with the way that you anticipate money coming in and how you pay off from that income your debts and obligations and other responsibilities. Even when you start thinking, wow, I've got so much business, I better hire somebody, that is a financial decision. It cannot be an emotional decision. We could probably do a whole show, Tom, on whether someone ought to go in partnerships with someone.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, that's a whole you want to complicate. You know, we're not just swimming with one or two sharks here. All of a sudden, we jumped into a whole sea of sharks if we're talking partnership. That just complicates things even more. Now, Tom, are you feeling that if someone pays attention to these four areas, that they have a pretty good shot at succeeding?
It's a good basis to begin with. It's the place of saying that this person, by nature and experience, has the rudiments of what it's going to take to be able to succeed. There are still probably more issues that they need to be thinking about, but this is probably the basis of what I'd be, if I sat and I was assessing someone and this is what they had and they wanted to get started, I would say I'd be more on the positive side of saying, let's kind of talk more about this.
Yeah, and actually, if somebody is listening and saying, someday I want to go into business, well, very first thing they ought to do is they need to get work experience in the thing that they want to start a business, and that would be a very smart thing. And then they need to be thinking in terms of, am I the kind of person that fulfills or follows these behavioral patterns that we're talking about? Well, with these established, let's turn to some key issues that need to be understood. And let me go up to bat on the first one.
Okay.
And usually it's the most critical one, and that is, well, where's the money going to come from? We have to have a large portion of the financing of this endeavor in the bag before you even open the door. And I have researched this. I have talked to very knowledgeable people. There are organized associations in most every state that are there as groups and gatherings to coach and train and mentor entrepreneurs that want to get something up and off the ground. And those types of organizations make a big deal about being attractive to venture capitalists. I mean, you when you talk entrepreneur, you know, in the next sentence you start hearing venture capital. Well, according to my research, venture capital is the worst place to get money. And the reason for that is a traditional venture capitalist organization They're in it for the money, and they will take the hair off your hide in order to get the return on their money. You have started a relationship that is going to own your soul if you accept venture capital money. Now, there are some enterprises that are just geared for that. I have coached clients that have done very successfully with venture capital money, but they knew what they were getting into. They were prepared for it. But the average individual, this is a killer. The very, very best place to get startup funding is from family and friends, and you just cut a deal. You try to work out the best deal you can, sell your venture, and sell what they're going to get out of it, and what security they need if this whole thing goes bottom up. That is the absolute very best place. And I would say that the startup person probably is not going to get a dime in their pocket for at least the first year. They're going to spend that whole first year taking every dollar they make and paying off the cost of operation and the cost of future investments. Any more on that, Tom, about financing?
Well, I totally agree with you. My own experience with it when I started my counseling practice, it was the same thing. It was family and people that I knew that were willing to kind of be a part of my my startup, and we made an agreement as far as, you know, when I was going to try to pay that back. And it just takes a lot of the pressure off to have to deal with people that have no relationship with you at all besides the finances. And again, I agree with you. There are some situations where venture capitalism is actually wonderful because it's larger blocks of money, but there's a lot that goes with that, and I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I coached a group of Hewlett-Packard executives that were moving away from a plant closure, and they liked working together, and they decided, hey, why don't we just incorporate, and they had no trouble at all getting venture capital. But these individuals were already a team. They were producing the same product that they had while they were employed. They had worked through all the legal arrangements, and it was a no-brainer for venture capital. I mean, the professionalism, the brand name, and on, it worked, and it worked very well. As a matter of fact, they gained more than one round of venture capital, and the company has done very well. So there are a few exceptions, but I'd say it's probably 100-1. Getting venture capital money is also a very lengthy process of being screened and interviewed and so on. So we got a few more things, Tom. Let's pick it up after the break.
Great.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you suggested that more education can be a curse as well as a blessing.
That's right, Evan. If a person chooses more education to acquire skills they don't have...
You mean innate skills they don't have.
Right. Someone who thinks they can gain hardwiring skills through education, well, I'm sad to say that for this person, there will be limited career success.
Hmm. So give us the positive side of the coin.
Well, the good side is that by choosing wisely, that is, the right career, an advanced degree can work wonders and even help the person get hired with the employer of their choice.
Well, that sounds encouraging. And I know you have more on this subject, like how does one know if a new career is really right for them and worth all that additional education?
That's right, Evan. We can discuss that on our next break, how to know for sure.
Thanks, John. If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's go back to our broadcast.
Okay, we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast talking about starting your own business and whether this is a smart thing to do or this could be the total disaster of the worst job you've ever had, and more dangerous than that, you could lose your shirt on the deal. So we're trying to review the tried and true, both from our personal experience and also from what the experts have shown as to is it smart to do this. And I'm joined by a special co-host today, Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. Tom, we were just going through some of the key issues in addition to the qualifications of the startup person. What are some of the key issues? And we just touched on financing. I would say a next one would be there needs to be a business plan. A business plan is like a resume times 10. It asks a lot of questions. Business plans are easy to get off the internet. But anyone that's going to loan anyone money, whether it's a bank or otherwise, is going to ask for a business plan. So the startup person needs to be aware, and this is probably like a three-unit class, three-credit class in somebody's college training to put a business plan together. It's just one of those things, but it protects you and protects the person. Another key issue, is the person that's starting this up needs to define his or her primary job duties. What are they going to be doing in this new business? And that role needs to be protected, because what happens sometimes is people start the business in order to do something, but they've not take into consideration the time that needs to be spent in just running the business. That isn't what they had planned to do. They wanted to do counseling, or they wanted to do teaching, or they wanted to do mechanical engineering, and all this other stuff, that's paperwork and selling and doing profit and loss statements and on, is just driving them crazy. Well, there needs to be a reality check here in terms of if you're going to start a business for at least the first 3 years, a big part of your job duty is going to be running this business, starting it and running it and promoting it and selling it. And so as time goes on, if that's not what you had in mind, maybe this is not a good venture for you. Tom, any other key issues that you feel are important that this person ought to be thinking about?
No, I really like what you said. I can kind of relate to when I started my own practice, and it was kind of a shock to me that I had a couple other partners with me in my practice, and it turned out that none of them had any finance, like we were talking before, business accounting background besides me. I have an engineering background. I like numbers, and I found myself doing all of the bookkeeping. And it was kind of a shock to me at first until I realized, well, either we do this or we pay somebody else to do it, but we didn't have that kind of income coming in, so it meant that I was going to have to do that. And so it was something of a learning process to realize, man, that needs to be a part of my job description and figure out how to put that in my time. So I really liked what you had to say about that. It's very true.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we have other, other considerations as a person is thinking this through. Is this going to be a solo, or is this going to be a growth enterprise? In other words, is this starting one's own business just about Joe or Sally, and they're doing their thing, and that's what it's going to be forever? Or is this the beginning, and down the road there's going to be other individuals that are going to be recruited to join the practice? I think that's another key area. Another important thing is what is the sales or marketing plan? We talked that the starter person needs to be inclined and positive about tooting their own horn, something they do naturally day after day, but there needs to be a plan, and that plan is going to cost money. I heard this from a very experienced marketing consultant, and I wish I had heard it initially. He said, if it takes you a dollar to make it, it'll take you $3 to sell it. And that just seems backwards to me. I think, you know, if it takes you $10 to build an automobile, why does it take you $30 to sell the automobile? You know, it seems backwards. But that has been proven to be true. It's very, very, very expensive to get the word out there in such a way that people will stop buying that item there and come to you to purchase what you have. Another item is the importance of how a person's feelings are being processed during this startup phase. There really are some down times, aren't there, Tom?
Absolutely. I think it's one of the more difficult things that you have to deal with as a business person is some of the fears and the doubts that kind of begin when things are starting to happen. And I think it's a time of opportunity for a lot of growth in the individual themselves to be able to kind of confront those things and to be able to work through them, to be able to keep pushing forward and keep believing in what they're wanting to do and what their, you know, the business is, to keep going after it. But it is very taxing at times, and as you said, it can actually affect marriages significantly. A lot of times, I tell people that if your wife is not on board with this, this is probably not a great idea.
Yeah. That's assuming that the wife isn't the startup person.
That is correct.
But
and
either
I've been
way.
In that situation too, right.
Yeah. Well, it would seem to me true also, Tom, that a person needs a friend to talk to, and that friend should not be one of the investors, a family member that has a vested interest. It's someone who has no claim on the success of the business. They can just talk and just get it out of you, especially when you lost that big contract or a project that you had been counting on did not come through, or some surprise competition showed up. There needs to be somebody that you can get to, and they've agreed to be a sounding board, a shoulder to lean on when you have that. And I've even heard many, many times among seasoned startup people, they recommend that you recruit other entrepreneurs, and they are like an informal advisory board. Matter of fact, that's the term that's used, an advisory board. And so five of you get together, and you talk about the stuff you're doing, and you agree to meet once a month. And each is becoming an advisor to the other. And you obviously you're doing things that are not in competition. But I've heard that over and over and over again as an important, even for CEOs that have a seasoned business that's been around for a while, of how important that is. Well, I think we've at least hit the ball and gotten to first base on this, Tom. Maybe
Absolutely.
It's time to turn to our job seeker questions and find out what struggles people are having in their own job search right in their backyard. How about giving us some of those?
Okay, well, let's get started here. There's a lady from Portland. Her name is Molly, and she said, I have completed a 2 years associate degree in college and have discovered that I don't like going to school. How do I get a good job if I don't like going to college for a 4-year degree?
Ah, well, why don't I take a swing at this, Tom, and then you can fill in what I don't cover. First thing that's really important is I'm not of the opinion that in order to get a good job, you need a college degree. The bottom line to getting a good job is prior work experience in, excuse me, in the field that you're trying to get to. That is the thing that the employer is looking for. And so, therefore, the most popular question is, tell me your qualifications. Tell me what is it you've done. And that way I can reduce my risk if I hire you. So Molly's saying she has a two-year associate's degree and doesn't like going to school. What she should then do is get into a line of work that she enjoys, and instead of climbing the ladder because she's got a college education, she ought to climb the ladder based on experience. Unfortunately, we don't have enough details to know, well, what is it that Molly would be good at doing? But certainly where she should start just to get some income is doing what she used to do, and then from there make the transition into something that pays a little better than what she's used to doing. Tom, shoot some holes in that.
No, I'm really with you on that. I think that the experience thing is by far the most important thing. And for her, you know, it might be of some help to kind of discover a little bit what she had some natural abilities in that can help her, even guide her in that. Sometimes I know people get very confused by what is it that they really like and what can they do. And that can, that'd be helpful to have a conversation with someone to be able to get them started in that direction. But I think you're right. It's jumping in, getting started. I've had a lot of folks that have gotten started in one place and kind of have discovered more of who they are and what they really like and look for another job that actually fits better. And so it's a progression of moving from one place to another that is kind of honing in on what they love to do, gaining experience, and as time goes on, people, just like you said, they hire them because they've done it and they like the way they work with people, the way they know the business or what their activity is, and that is the way to kind of create a different kind of resume that does not have at the top where you went to school and what your degree was.
Yeah, and actually we've said this on many, many broadcasts. The best thing Molly could do to get hired is to enroll in a two-unit class so she's still a student, and then search for a field experience that would allow her some hands-on experience in something she would like to do while she's still classified as a student. Then doing that on-site work experience provides the opportunity for her to be hired by the company she's with. Let's take a break, Tom, and we'll pick this up when we get back.
We're taking a short 2-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley about the wisdom of pursuing an advanced degree as a strategic step to a better job. John, in our last break, you left us hanging with the statement that we could know the right career for sure, for sure. Those were your very words, that we could know if a future career direction is right and worth any investment of more education.
Right, Evan. Those were my very words. You can know the right career for sure, for sure.
Okay, so how does one know?
Well, let's think about house hunting. You are meeting with a realtor and asking that person to help you find the ideal home that has, say, 3 bedrooms, a good neighborhood, and so on. The realtor does a computer search and finds 5 houses for sale which fit your preferences.
Okay, I'm with you so far.
Well, here you have the pictures, and on the computer you can take a virtual tour of each house. Are you ready to make a decision to buy that one?
Well, no, I'm not ready. Virtual reality is good for a start, but I need something more tangible. I mean, I want to see the house. I want to walk in the rooms, look at the backyard.
You mean you want to walk through the house before you buy it, right?
Right.
Well, that is the same approach to selecting your ideal career. You want to meet the person who has your job.
You mean meet face-to-face?
Yes, face-to-face at the job site, not over coffee. To make a confident decision, you need to see, feel, touch, taste, hear, smell, talk, and finally dream. Then you will know for sure, for sure.
So where are you going to find that person? I don't know all the people employed out there in 50 states.
Well, Evan, because this step of career validation is so important, our mid-career advancement services provide that link for our clients to find that person in their city who represents each recommended career.
So the hopeful career can know for sure, for sure.
Yes, he and she can know for sure, for sure.
Well, John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference, Preferred Counselors, at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show. Let's return.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by Jobs Career Advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
We're back to our broadcast, and my special guest co-host is Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. Tom, we're now discussing questions that we've received from job seekers. Any more insights or advice to Molly about going beyond her two-year associate's degree that you want to add before we go to someone else?
No, I don't think so. I really liked what we had to say. So
great.
I think we could move on then.
Okay.
Let's see. I have one here from Craig, Oregon, and similar to Molly, but a little different. He says, I worked full-time for 2 years after high school. I'm thinking I need to go to college to get a good-paying job. College is expensive, so I don't know what major to choose that will help me get a good job. Can you help?
Okay. Well, I'm glad that Croy realizes that there's a price tag to pay here, and we keep reading in the news that this huge, huge amount of debt that college graduates are incurring because of some dream that they're going to land this great job and they're going to be able to pay off this debt with that job, and for too many individuals, that's just not the case. So, Croy, just want to commend you in thinking on the financial side of things. Let me say that it would be smart at this juncture, before even starting college, that Croy finds the person that is doing the job he wants. Now, here's the benefit. By meeting the person that's doing the job that Croy wants, first, he's going to find out if college is necessary. Second, he'll find out which is the best college for the pursuit of that kind of work. And third, he will find out what college major and even what professors or what classes. And then there's another benefit, in that if Croy has met someone and Croy identifies with the work they're doing and is excited about it, it's very possible that once he enrolls as a student, then that individual could be a resource for a field experience. That individual now has become an informal coach of sorts. And, you know, it feels pretty good if I give somebody some advice and they end up pursuing the area that I've recommended. Well, I'm sort of feeling like I'm part of the family, and maybe I want to help this person a little more with some suggestions of what they might do. It's the thing I think we're saying is you don't need a college degree to get a good-paying job. However, if you choose the right college program and you supplement it with field experience, meaning work on the job, then yes, you will end up with a better position than if you did not go to college. I'm certain of saying that, but there's that caveat in there is we need some real-world experience that supplements your classroom training. And if you don't have that, then you're just another number out there compared to all the others that went through school. Grade point average and a list of all the classes and what school you graduated from is not going to land you find that dream kind of job. Anything else you want to say to Croy here, Tom?
Yeah, and I think the thing that the only other little thing that I would add is that, you know, it is a real process to be able to kind of find what it is that you really love to do and to find what it will take to kind of accomplish that. And as you're putting so eloquently, the steps in which to get there, it's really worth the effort to do that. Sometimes people get very discouraged. They want a very simple answer here. And the truth is it's going to take a little bit of work of exploring and talking to people to be able to kind of find out what it is they really want to do and what's it going to take for them to really make that happen for themselves.
Absolutely, yes, yes. Okay, any other job seeker questions for us today?
Okay, let's see what I have here. All right, I have another person here from Houston. His name is Clarence, and he asks, I have been doing odd jobs for many years. I really like photography but can't figure out how to get a stable job doing that. Is there a stable career using photography skills?
Ah, well, this is one of my favorites, and the reason is that for all my years in coaching individuals in their career advancement, I like to reach out to those that are more artistically or musically inclined who've been struggling to make a living with their art, their art expression, because it really, really is more difficult. And the thing, I think the first message we want to give is this, Clarence, you can do this. This is something that can be done, but it does involve some careful planning here. So continue doing these odd jobs so you have some income, but we need a plan. And the plan has to revolve around, and it almost sounds like a broken record here, you got to meet the person that is making an income from photography. So what I think, Tom, you and I can do is give some suggestions. There are organizations that develop their own media training film. The cost of media production technology has gone way down. There's just incredible kind of stuff that the average individual with a two-unit college course can learn how to use a computer and a camera, and they're in business. And so given that, organizations are developing their own educational and training films and materials that they'll either put on the web as a podcast or they'll use in orientation. So any good-sized organization is a potential employer, providing they have their own media department. So that would be the first place to find someone who is doing that. I would then go to nonprofits that are providing social service. Those organizations generally either have a media person on staff if they're a good size, or they contract, and they're using that media both for their website for publicity. They're also using it for their banquets and their conferences to advertise what they're doing, kind of a media summary of their annual report. But they're also using it as part of their service. If they're training refugees on how to learn English, or if they're training immigrants on how to apply for a job, it's much more cost-effective to have some kind of a film that is then facilitated by a live person than to do it every single time in a certain way. That is a huge inventory of potential employers that are going to pay someone for photography-related skills. Now, this is motion picture photography as opposed to individual photography, but there is a close association there because you can use still photography in the motion picture or media process. The two go hand in hand. It's not an either or type thing. Tom, any other thoughts from you on that?
Well, I think this is one of those places where, for Clarence, another possibility, and I've had a little success with this, it doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes you can find photographers, and this is not the video, it is actually photographers that do weddings, things like that, that will mentor people, that they have a heart for that. I've met a few of those folks that are willing to do that, and it might be worth Clarence's worthwhile if you could find someone like that, that be willing to kind of give him a chance to kind of be a part of the business, even if it's if it means just volunteering work so that they can learn. And it can be under the guise of doing photography, but it's also learning the business at the same time to be able to see how that happens. You know, right now I've got two or three guys that over taken to they all have gotten their photography businesses up and running and established, but it takes some time, and they've kind of learned either from each other or from this one mentor that they got started with, and it's just been kind of snowballing. So they're out there. There's some people out there that'd be a great way to kind of get into the field, to kind of learn how to be able to kind of make it into a business.
Yeah, and you're now referring to the more traditional role.
Correct.
Of a subcontracted or just a freelance photographer.
Right.
That's doing weddings and special occasions. Absolutely, yes. And if you have a professional association, the American Association of Home Remodelers, let's say, each state would have one chapter of that. Generally speaking, associations are all about members and people when they have their barbecues, when they have their semi-annual meetings, and they have somebody there. Tom, we've run out of time. Thank you for a great show today.
You're very welcome. Enjoy being with you, John.
And so that concludes our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group. He's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. John has authored 4 career advancement books. He led the development team for the premier IDAC Career Match instrument, which has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide. John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. And he's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he highlights on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They're not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they've not been paid any fee to be featured. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I invite you to join us next week at this same time for our next live broadcast. Say, do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or a Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcasts by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.